Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Muy buenas tardes y bienvenidos. I'm Patrick Velasquez. I'm a lecturer in the Education Studies program at UC San Diego. It's my pleasure to host today's program. On our program today, we're having a conversation with Dr. Chuck Tatum, who is a professor of Spanish and the former Dean of Humanities at the University of Arizona. This first week of April 2009, Chuck is on our campus having a number of conversations with members of the UCSD community about the work that he's done in achieving greater levels of diversity and equity at the University of Arizona. So Chuck, bienvenido, es un placer.
Muchas gracias, no, es un placer estar aquí con ustedes. No, it's a pleasure to be here with you all.
Great. Chuck, can you start our conversation by just telling us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, I grew up in Mexico. My mom is from El Paso. Her family is from Hermosillo. I grew up, spent 17 years in Mexico and then came out to the States. I grew up bilingually and biculturally. Have benefited a great deal from my mother's wisdom and speaking Spanish to me exclusively in the home. And, of course, I learned English from my dad. I was dean for 15 years at the University of Arizona, and before that I was a department head for 9 years at Arizona and elsewhere. And I've been working in these fields of diversity for a long time. And then when I became dean 15 years ago, I decided to try to make my college, the College of Humanities, a model for the recruitment and retention of a diverse faculty, as well as students, graduate students, staff. So now I'm back in faculty status, teaching Chicano literature, Mexican literature, and I'm very happy about that.
Sounds good. Chuck, your background is very interesting on a number of levels. If I can make an observation, one of the tensions, if you will, that I've seen in higher education for at least 30 years is between the different roles that faculty can play in higher education. And on one hand, you have the sort of traditional role of scholar, but on the other hand, some faculty will play the role of what we might call an activist or somebody who advocates for positive change on the campus. And I know that you've done a lot of scholarly work. You've published a number of works, including books and journals, and received a lot of recognition for your scholarly work. So I wanted to ask if you could tell us a little bit about how you've negotiated this complex process of moving from being a scholar, which is a much more individualistic role, to taking a more collective role as an activist and an administrator who really is responsible and conscious of creating change in the areas of diversity.
Well, I don't see these as being mutually exclusive. As our new president, President Obama, has said, I can multitask. And it's been a balancing act, there's no doubt about it. And during my time in academic administration, I've tried to keep my hand in teaching as well. So I usually teach a course per year. But my activism and my wanting to make a statement at the University of Arizona in terms of how diversity can succeed or how the recruitment or retention of students and faculty can succeed, I see that as an outgrowth and, quite frankly, as a complement to my scholarship and my teaching. If I were in a completely different field, perhaps it might have been more difficult, but I don't see these as, having required a superhuman effort. I see them as natural and complementary and integrated.
Chuck, in 2005, you authored a report titled Charting a University of Arizona Course Toward Becoming an Hispanic-Serving Institution. And this is a report that addresses the recruitment and the retention of Chicano Latino students and faculty and administrators. Chuck, just to clarify for our audience, if I understand correctly, an Hispanic-Serving Institution is a college or university with a student enrollment that's at least 25% Latino, no?
That's correct, and it's from a certain income level as well. So it's not just across the board. There are guidelines as far as economic need and so forth.
And what would you say is the significance of that designation for an institution like the University of Arizona?
Well, for the University of Arizona, which is currently about 16% Latino, it gave us a goal. And that's what I saw the great value of an HSI, or Hispanic Serving Institution, serving our particular campus. we were going to get there anyway. We're going to get there anyway, maybe in 10 years, simply because of demographic change, where the state will be probably 50% Latino by, in 10 years, 10 or 15 years. And the university enrollment will change accordingly. But I thought we could do better than that and actually strive for it and develop strategies to get there much sooner.
And I'm hoping, Chuck, that we can get to the issue of diverse faculty and administration, but I wanted to begin the specific conversation about building a critical mass of Latinos and other underrepresented students. And in your work at the University of Arizona, what have you found to be the most formidable barriers to developing that kind of critical mass?
I think it's sustained effort on the part of university administration that translates into the distribution of resources to those people who work in recruitment at the very basic level, the people who work with the schools from the elementary grades on up, and then maintaining those contacts over middle school and high school, so that students, when they make the decision to come to a university, come to the university, ours or some other one, well prepared and already familiar with the campus. So it's not seen as an alien world. This is particularly true for first generation Latino students, and many of the Latino students in a couple of the districts in Tucson are first generation. So that's the biggest barrier, but it's a commitment, not in terms of rhetoric, but in terms of distribution of resources so that people can do their job in getting those students to our campus.
It's interesting when we talk about the importance of that critical mass of underrepresented students that we know in higher education there's a considerable body of research evidence now that documents the educational benefits of having a diverse student body. And I think the powerful thing about this research is that it takes diversity beyond just the level of equity and the concern for fairness with underrepresented students, and really talks about the significant effects on all students at the university. But it seems like in some cases, I know at our institution here at UC San Diego, we've made remarkably little progress towards achieving that kind of diverse student body for the last 10 or 15 years. And I'm wondering, Chuck, if you think that higher education has been largely slow to recognize this research evidence and make the kind of resource allocations you talked about to achieve that.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. Elite institutions such as the University of California at San Diego and to a great extent Arizona as well pride themselves in the production of new knowledge and in making innovations available to the public, et cetera, and being on the cutting edge of different fields of research. But when it comes to changing our own culture, the academic culture and academic institutions like UCSD, I'm assuming this, and Arizona, are very, very slow to change. They're almost resistant to changing their own way of thinking, their own way of viewing the world. And this whole issue of diversity, which perhaps 30 years ago was a social issue, a political issue, enlightened administrators now and faculty as well see diversity as actually a contributing factor towards the excellence of the institution. We live in a diverse world. We're cheating students if we don't prepare them for a diverse world, and if we don't have people who represent various underrepresented minority groups represented in large numbers at institutions such as your institution and my institution, it's a disservice to everybody. It's an educational disservice to everybody. It's a national disservice.
And another analysis that I've seen, Chuck, is that what ethnic studies scholars often refer to as white privilege, the notion that white privilege is really deeply entrenched in higher education at all levels. And to what degree do you think that might be a variable that contributes to this lack of institutional will to achieve a critical mass?
You see it in insidious ways, particularly among faculty, so-called liberal faculty or even progressive faculty. Self-identified liberal and progressive faculty will often posit what they see as a contradiction between diversity and excellence. whereas, you know, resting on their very comfortable notion of what constitutes excellence, which plays itself out by eliminating and keeping out of the academy diversity, whereas diversity really is part of excellence. It's another ingredient of another factor that should be considered when one is talking about the excellence of an institution or the excellence of a research program.
Yeah, I've heard it said that that's a necessary but insufficient condition of excellence, is you really have to have diversity.
Absolutely.
You can't really stake a claim to being an excellent institution.
It would be as though a scientist is ignoring a whole body of research in order to prove his or her hypotheses. Well, when you're ignoring the changing demographics and the globalized world that we live in, and you eliminate diversity, it's like you're dealing with the world 50 years ago, 60 years ago.
And if we move beyond the level of analysis to think about solutions and innovative ways to do that, Chuck, what have you found to be the most effective and useful strategies at the University of Arizona to recruit and retain Latino students in particular? I know there's a big demographic population of Latinos in the state of Arizona in the Tucson area where your institution is located.
Yeah.
What have you found in terms of effective strategies?
It's called investment in the elementary school years. There's a big body of research that shows unless school kids and their parents from the early elementary school years on are not committed or don't begin talking about the potential of their kids going to a university or going on beyond high school, the chances of that happening are dramatically reduced. So I think universities, public universities such as the University of Arizona and perhaps UCSD, need to create much, much more robust programs where they're in contact with those children, particularly first generation in the case of Tucson, and their parents and their teachers, and the principals and counselors, et cetera, so that that connection is made very early on, and universities then need to kind of proceed lockstep through the middle school and the high school years so that kids are taking the rigorously academic curriculum that's going to get them into college and beyond that that allows them to succeed in college once they get there. Campuses should not be strange places like SeaWorld or Disneyland for kids who are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and their parents who live just down maybe 4 or 5 miles from the campus, but live in economically depressed areas. The campus should be welcome to them as well, early.
Chuck, I know that there's been a lot of conversations on our campus, and a number of advocates for equity and diversity have talked about the very important role that campus climate plays in this, and that if you want to have an effective strategy institutionally for recruiting and retaining underrepresented students, you have to have an equitable and supportive campus climate. Could you talk a little bit about how the campus climate does affect those outcomes and also then how an institution does move or transform itself to accomplish a more of a inclusive campus climate?
Yeah, campus climate is multidimensional. Let's start with the student. The student who comes on campus, say, as an elementary school kid or a middle school or a high school kid, and then maybe a person who's been a kid who's been admitted to a campus like Arizona, and comes on and deals with people who, by and large, are not of his or her cultural background or ethnic background or racial background. I think it's very discouraging for kids, many of whom have gone through high school, middle school, and elementary school in a fairly homogeneous population, and then suddenly be thrust into a situation on a campus where there's that huge disparity between what they experienced and what they likely are going to experience. I think that disincentivizes students, and I think students struggle with that in very real ways. So I think campus climate starts with a critical mass of students, faculty, staff, administrators who, in fact, are understanding of and from the same cultural background as many of the students coming to campus, whether it be it Chicanos, be it African American, be it Native American.
And I assume that the shift according to an inclusive campus climate is something that really entails the engagement of all sectors of the campus climate.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And faculty, graduate students, departments, they all need to be involved too. It's not something that we can relegate to student affairs or to the admissions people or to the recruitment people. It's got to be integrated.
Okay. And Chuck, how would you respond to an argument that we hear a lot, which is that most Chicano Latino high school students don't have the kind of academic preparation to succeed at a selective institution like UCSD or the University of Arizona, and that they might be better off attending a community college instead?
I've heard that for 20 years in Tucson, and I reject that. Obviously, we have school districts that are not as well funded as other school districts. Public education in Arizona, in terms of funding, is almost dead last. We're competing with states that historically have underfunded public education, and it's getting worse rather than better. And I think that's where universities need to step into the vacuum there and provide that kind of leadership and devote those kinds of resources, again, to the public schools where you find large concentrations, let's say, of Latino students, and give a helping hand, not as a social statement or as a moral statement, but as an educational issue, where we in fact enable students to get the kind of contacts they need early on, and to get the kind of education, or at least model for them the kind of education that they're going to need to get to the university. Our dropout rate in Arizona is also one of the highest in the nation. And for public universities, particularly land-grant universities such as Arizona, to stand by while in its own backyard in Pima County, kids are failing right and left. I like to use the pyramid, where right now it's just the pinnacle of the pyramid of Latino kids who reach the University of Arizona. And, you know, through strategic investments, I'd like that geometric shape to change to a rectangle, you know, where there's a chorro, a flood of kids who graduate from high school and are coming to Arizona or to other campuses such as UCSD.
And as we talk about these, it is very hard to separate issues from those that relate to students directly and their retention and recruitment and those of faculty. And I think, again, a lot of advocates for equity would argue that one of the fundamental components of an inclusive and supportive campus climate is a diverse faculty. And so I wanted to ask the same question we talked about earlier. At the University of Arizona, what have you seen to be some of the most difficult barriers that get in the way of achieving a diverse faculty?
Well, I think the biggest problem is accountability, quite frankly. I think there's a great deal of rhetoric that one finds in public statements by administrators, chancellors, and presidents, and so forth. But if administrators are unwilling to carry out their rhetoric, that is to put in practice their good-sounding rhetoric, by devising a fairly rigorous system of rewards and punishments in the recruitment and retention of faculty, nothing's going to happen. Rhetoric is easy. Rhetoric is cheap. The really hard work comes, though, when you make a department head or you make a dean or you make faculty search committees responsible for producing a diverse pool of candidates and then acting through that process until, in fact, there's much more success at the other end.
And I wanted us to talk a little bit about some of those barriers specifically and some that certainly we've observed in the San Diego area, not only with UCSD, but other institutions like San Diego State and Cal State San Marcos, the University of San Diego, that are all struggling to achieve a more diverse faculty. One of the things, of course, that we hear often is this notion that the pool of qualified underrepresented candidates is not adequate. And what do you think of that kind of response?
Well, it varies according to discipline. I think in the humanities, that probably isn't the case, and I don't think it's true in education as well. But let's take science as an example. I talked yesterday in my presentation to a varied audience that the idea of growing your own really needs to be acted on in a very aggressive way. Here at UCSD, you have an extremely high standard for admission to this university. The kids who come here, the young men and women who come here and finish here and go on to graduate school, let's say a Latino student, as they go on to graduate school, departments, particularly faculty members and others, need to track them, find out where they're going to graduate school, find out when they finish, and then see if, upon the completion of their MD degree or their law degree or their PhD, if there's a fit back here at UCSD or Arizona in our case. And I think that's one way of overcoming the shallow pool in certain areas, such as the sciences or perhaps in engineering. I don't know the statistics here, but at Arizona, there are a lot of young men and women who go through and successfully complete their degrees in science and engineering. And many of them go on to graduate school for an advanced degree. Bring them back. See if they're interested in coming back to their undergraduate institution and becoming a tenure ladder faculty member. I know it's happened here in the medical school, and I think that's a great model for other colleges.
There's another response that we've heard that says, and we hear this often, I think, at the administrative level of, say, divisional deans or academic vice chancellors, and that's the idea that those administrators cannot micromanage faculty hiring. And what that results in is a great deal of autonomy to the academic departments themselves, such that those that are not diverse continue to basically reproduce the same demographics. And what kind of strong leadership do you think is necessary from above to change that kind of cycle?
Well, I think administrators from, in our case, from the president and the provost, in your case, from the your chancellor and senior vice chancellor and college deans, division deans, et cetera, there needs to be some accountability. You know, from the very highest ranks of administration at a university, it needs to be made clear that unless departments and colleges are not diversifying their faculty and are not carrying out aggressive searches that result in a more diverse faculty, there are going to be consequences such as the withholding of positions or actually stopping searches in midstream, reassessing so that people get the idea over a few hiring cycles that it's not going to be business as usual. It really is the only solution. Good intentions just won't get us there.
We have time for maybe a couple of more questions, Chuck. One, I think you've mentioned some aspects of already, but I wanted to see if there were any other strategies that you found to be particularly useful in terms of developing a diverse faculty at your university?
Yeah, you have to create a welcoming climate for those faculty members who come and interview. You're not going to hire all the ones who come to campus to interview. You usually bring four to campus, hire one. But you have to provide a welcoming climate for all of them when they come on campus. And that doesn't mean restricting them to the faculty or the graduate students in a particular department. They need to get out and see what other faculty and other areas across your own college and other colleges are, in this case, Latino or African American. They need to talk to staff, need to talk to students and graduate students. They need to also be made aware of the community leadership that's supporting diversity at the university. So that they get the whole picture of what they would be coming to if they're offered the position and they should decide to accept. I think isolation during the recruitment process is deadly, and it doesn't give the candidate a realistic picture of what the institution and the surrounding community are like. And then once they're at the campus, then they need to be treated in very special ways to protect them from overuse or overcommitment on committees and other areas so that they can gain tenure and then become the leaders of the future.
Chuck, I think our last question is a very critical one. It has to do with the representation of Chicanos and underrepresented folks in high administrative positions.
Yes.
That's something we certainly haven't achieved much of here at UC San Diego, and part of the worry is that when issues of diversity and equity are discussed, that the folks that are most impacted are not there or present in those conversations. And what do you think are some of the ways that get into the problems related to this factor? Are there issues of stereotypes about our abilities to fulfill these positions, or is it a simple unwillingness to share power, or maybe a combination of these variables?
I think it's a combination. And in terms of strategies to increase administrative leadership from underrepresented groups, it's some of the same strategies that that I addressed for the recruitment and retention of faculty. Grow your own. You know, when that young assistant professor comes in, you leave him or her alone for 6 years so they can gain tenure. But then you start asking or planting the seed if they might be interested in academic administration. If they are, then there are ways to nurture that person, to mentor that person as they, you know, go on towards their promotion to full professor, so that they're ready to step into a position as maybe an associate chair or as a chair. And there are other programs. There are programs like the ACE Fellowship Program that they can attend that are nationally funded, where they can learn how to become a academic administrator. There are a lot of opportunities, but it's nurturing our own, so that when they're ready to make that decision, they can step into those leadership positions and then on up the administrative ladder. Same strategy as students and faculty.
Well, Chuck, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. The conversation has been very interesting, and I think it's going to be very useful for our campus. Again, we are engaged in a number of efforts to try to increase diversity and equity at the UC San Diego campus. We have a long ways to go, but I think some of the wisdom that you've shared with us and the things that you've learned are going to be very instructive. So thank you very much. Muchas gracias.
No hay de qué, de nada, and I very much welcome the opportunity, and I thank you for hosting me on this show.
And thank you very much for watching today.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.